I'm Tom Kaiser. I was part of this evaluation team that's been working for the past several years. In the group of researchers listed there, Sharon Esty, Melissa Ford-Shaw, Lijan Hay, David Mancuso, they all work at the Research and Data Analysis Unit within the Department of Social and Health Services. Alice Huber works in the Division of Alcohol and Substance Abuse. And until last fall, I was a professor at the University of Washington. I've recently moved to Ohio State. But before I get started, I'll just make a couple of comments. We're fortunate in Washington, in evaluating the ESPER program, to be able to take advantage of a great data capability that was actually developed in large part by one of the authors, David Mancuso. So what that does is it takes monthly Medicaid claims data that covers ABD clients, TANF clients, as well as general assistance clients, and uploads that into a database and then merges arrest data with that and employment data. So this kind of study would not have been possible without, certainly without that having access to that database. So what I'm going to be talking about in Washington, the ESPER program was implemented in hospital emergency departments. Hasn't been a lot of work. There's been some looking at either SBI programs or ESPER programs in hospital settings, but there hasn't been a lot of research to date on that. So acknowledgments, SAMHSA funded our evaluation as well as the project overall, and I think, as I said, the grant was administered by the Department of Social and Health Services, the Division of Alcohol and Substance Abuse, and the project was implemented in 9 hospitals and 7 chemical dependency treatment agencies. No disclosures to highlight. So I'm going to give you a little background and then talk about the study aims, the data, the findings, and the conclusion. So probably all of you are pretty familiar with ESPER, but SAMHSA sponsored the major initiative, I think, starting in 2003 to support the development of ESPER programs. They were initially established in 6 states, as well as a tribal council, including Washington State. Washington is one of the first round funders. They were later expanded to other states. An important goal of ESPER was establishing referral linkages to treatment. That's really one of the things that that distinguished it from many other just screening and brief intervention programs. They don't have the linkages to treatment, which obviously was important for this study, and in fact that's what we really tried to evaluate. So some more about, or something about our what we call WASPER program. It was established in the state, screens hospital emergency department patients for alcohol and other drug use using the AUDIT and the DAS-10 instruments, provides brief interventions, BIs, and brief treatment. Brief treatment or brief therapy, it's also known as, consists of about 5 or 6 fairly brief, basically outpatient counseling kind of sessions, more informal though than formal chemical dependency treatment. Refers patients for either brief treatment or substance abuse treatment. Linkage to the treatment system was a key component of the WASPER program. So chemical dependency professionals were hired to conduct the screening and provide brief intervention and referrals. Since April 2004, over 100,000 patients have been screened in the 9 intervention hospitals, and over half the patients have received at least a brief intervention. So a couple words about the evaluation. We've conducted an evaluation to assess 3 different general outcomes. First, we looked at healthcare costs, wrote a paper that Sharon Esty's the lead author on, and that was published in Medical Care in January of 2010. And then the current ongoing study, which I'm talking about today, is the effect of ESPER on admission to treatment. And then we are soon going to start the third study, which is to look at 5-year mortality associated with ESPER. So the current study, our objective was really to assess the impact of ESPRT on referral and admission to treatment for three groups. First, the working age and disabled, or what's generally known as ABD, Medicaid patients. These are high-risk patients, basically, lots of chronic disease, mental health, comorbidities. In Washington, they account for 18% of the medical assistance enrollees, but 47% of the Medicaid costs. So they, you know, they're a group of you know, at-risk disabled patients. The second group was general assistance patients, what we call in Washington GAU. So GAU, general assistance, is really a short-term kind of welfare. It's for people that have been determined because of a physical disability or a mental disability to be unable to work for 90 days. You get on general assistance. Most of those people then get off general assistance, or they transition on to, we have a couple of programs that are transition programs before you qualify for SSI. And then the third group is TANF clients. That's basically the moms and the kids. So a couple of words about our study design. The eligibility criteria are shown in this slide. People had to have at least 1 month eligibility in the pre and post periods. They had to be Medicaid only. We excluded people with dual eligibility for Medicaid and Medicare. To be aged 18 to 64 and alive 12 months after the month in which the index ED visit occurred. So we refer to this index ED visit. Some people during the study interval had more than one ED visit. We define the first visit as the index visit, and that's what started the clock on the post period or the pre period. So the intervention group consisted of 7,097 people screened between April 04 and June 08 that met the criteria. The breakdown is shown here across the three welfare cohorts: 2517 ABD clients, about 800 GAU clients, and 3800 TANF clients. The comparison group was the same number, 7,097, because we used propensity score matching 1-to-1 to create the comparison group, so the numbers are the same. The comparison group patients had to have had an emergency department visit between the same dates, April 04 to June 08, and be resident in one of the six counties in which WASPRT was offered. So we used kind of standard logistic regression techniques to create the propensity scores that were then used to match the clients and construct the comparison groups. And we also used those same models to estimate the odds of admission to treatment within 90 days following the brief intervention that occurred at the index visit. Okay, and so we were looking for differences within the 90-day period following that index visit, and we defined the 24 months pre-screening as the baseline period. You might ask, well, why did you choose 90 days instead of 180 days or 360 days? A couple of reasons. One is that we felt that would minimize the problems of attribution. The further you go out, the more other factors besides the screening and brief intervention can affect referral and admission to treatment. And, you know, I'm not a clinician, but I think there's pretty good clinical evidence that after referral, what you want is timely admission, not admission to treatment, you know, 6 months or 12 months later. So that's why we chose 90 days. But in fact, we replicated the same analysis using 180 days and 360 days, and we got similar results. So it really, frankly, didn't matter too much. The data source was the Washington State Client Administrative Records and Medicaid claims data. These data included a small set of factors that were used as covariates: age, race, gender, county of residence. We had a few variables that represented health status indicators. We had a chronic illness risk score, which is a validated score widely used based on diagnosis information and pharmacy data. We had a variable in the model that represented need for treatment, which I don't have a lot of time to describe, but if any of you are interested, you can contact me. We've actually used it before, and it's been shown to have good predictive validity. We wrote a paper on that a few months ago, but it is a combination of arrest data, diagnosis data, and prior substance abuse treatment. So it switches on if you've had any one of a set of variables within those three categories. And then health condition, we included variables representing liver disease, depression, whether or not they had an injury, and one or two other variables. And then we also included prior substance abuse treatment in the model. So here's some descriptive data. How am I doing on time?
You've got about 7 minutes.
Okay. So here's some descriptive data. You can tell that there was some difference in percent males across the three welfare cohorts. 57% of the ABD clients were male, 68% of the GAU clients, and as expected, only 24% of the TANF clients. Percent white was around 65% or so. Prior need for treatment, you can see, was much higher in the ABD group than in the GAU group, and especially in the TANF group. That was to be expected given the differences in those three groups. Health risk score also, you see, is 1.6 for ABD, 0.8 for GAU, 0.6 for TANF. This health risk score is norm, so that one is the average health risk score for the for an SSI patient, to give you some reference. Prior substance abuse treatment, again, you see a real difference between the ABD and the TANF clients. ABD is just a much higher risk group of folks. Greater percentages of those people were arrested, higher depression, and greater use of a prior emergency department visit. So this is descriptive data on 90-day admission rates, and you can see the WASPR group compared to the comparison group. Again, fairly large differences in the percent of people admitted within 90 days. For example, the ABD clients, there was 11% of the WASPR group was admitted within 90 days compared to 4.6% of the comparison group. TANF clients, there was about a threefold difference, 6.2% versus 2.3%. These are a summary of our 90-day admission rates from our logistic regression, but given, I didn't present it here in the interest of time, but our matching propensity score matching worked quite well, so they were very similar on the measure characteristics. So it really didn't matter if you used kind of fancy logistic regression, we could have reported unadjusted odds ratios. But so these are the summary. Their ABD clients were 2.6 times as likely to be admitted as comparison group clients. GAU clients were 3.2 times as likely to be admitted in the 90-day period as were TANF clients. So conclusions, there's little information on the effects of ESPRT on referral and admission to treatment. Results indicate that ESPRT was associated with significant increase in the odds of ED patients being admitted to substance abuse treatment. Our earlier evaluation showed that ESPRT was also associated with significant cost offset savings on the order of about $325 per member per month. And I guess the last point, the ED may offer a desirable setting for ESPRT programs. A lot of people that show up in EDs have injuries that are alcohol or drug related. So it provides a good setting for screening those patients. I'll take some questions if you have any.
Thank you.
Yeah. Could you explain what your procedure was to make the, when you made the referral? Did you just give them a piece of paper with the name of the, or did you do some active case management?
Yeah, that's right. That's a great question. Unfortunately, you're talking to the wrong guy to answer that question. Let me just give you a short, incomplete answer. I think it varied by hospital. The counselors were given fair latitude. So they if they screened positive on the audit or the DAS, they were referred for a BI. Clients that scored above about 15 on the audit, I believe, for males and females, I'm not totally sure about that, were then referred for BT. And I don't know the formal mechanism, if they, like you say, were handed a piece of paper or exactly. It's a very good question how that worked. And I'm actually writing up this right now, and I will ask my colleague, because I should include that in the...